You're with Cape Talk.
All right, 7:43. We all know, of course, that good sleep is important for good health, mental and physical. So if you are one of the millions of people globally who are affected by poor sleep or perhaps a sleep disorder, you will know, or if you're affected by a toddler or a baby, you'll know how debilitating the effects of not having good sleep can be. Did you know that 45% of the global population suffer from sleep issues, the most common of which is a lack of sleep. Not only that, but sleep-related absence from work is thought to account for the loss of 10 million working hours every year in the USA. This morning, we're going to be talking about how to get the best sleep that you can, the impact of a lack of good sleep on the brain, and hopefully also the things that you can do to improve your sleep. And of course, we're opening up the lines to you to put your questions to our expert this morning. Kerry Rudman is a trained neurofeedback practitioner and also the owner of Brain Harmonics, which is a neurofeedback organisation specialising in retraining brains. Kerry, it's absolutely great to have you with us this morning and such a great topic. Why then is good sleep so important? Hi.
Hi. Well, for absolutely all your functioning, focus, concentration. We all know about balance. Balance is the best thing for us in every aspect. So getting quality sleep is going to help your body physically, your mind mentally. It's going to help you emotionally. So when people don't sleep for extended periods of time, things start to go wrong.
What then, and I think probably, you know, I'm sort of nodding along to that, and I imagine a lot of people are too. What then does healthy sleep look like? And I'm imagining that our needs, our sleep needs vary. I'm somebody that, you know, unless I have 10 hours sleep, haven't had that for a really long time. But really, that feels to me the sort of the optimum for me. 8 hours has never really felt enough. And I wonder if that's because I've always been someone who struggles with sleep. But I mean, what does healthy sleep look like?
So you're correct. It is different for everybody. Basically, what's going to happen is whichever sleep cycle you're in, you need to go through the correct REM cycles in the night, meaning your sleep cycles between light sleep into deep sleep. So some people need 3 REM cycles a night, some people need 4, and some people need 5. So the average is that you should sleep 6.5 hours, 8.5 hours, or 9.5 hours. And that is different for everybody. What's interesting is some people think they sleep. You might think you're getting 10 hours sleep a night. But if you had a sleep monitor of some kind, a smartwatch or something that monitored your sleep, a lot of people are only getting light sleep. They're not going into the correct REM cycle.
Yeah.
So what would look like good sleep is to wake up feeling rested and get through your whole day without needing some kind of boost at 4 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
When you're getting tired later on, you're not getting quality sleep.
It's interesting you say that. My mum has sleep apnea, but it only got diagnosed quite late in her life. So although it appeared in terms of, as you say, in terms of length of time that she thought she was asleep, that would have looked fine if you were doing a tick list of how long, you know, what time do you go to bed, what time do you wake up. But actually, because of the sleep apnea, she was waking up every minute and she was probably never getting into that that pod of sleep that you're talking about, and then would inevitably fall asleep during the day, often at the wheel. So, I mean, thank goodness she ended up getting diagnosed and now she has, you know, a sleep apnea machine. What is happening to our brains, Kerry, when we're suffering with poor sleep or sleep loss?
So what is happening in the moment, we're not entirely sure.
Right.
But what the effects of it long term is that it's going to give you a foggy brain. So when you're trying to focus and concentrate, you battle to take information in because all your sleep's sitting in the front of your head instead of at the back where it's supposed to be. So concentration and focus becomes difficult. It also can cause problems emotionally long-term. So people get agitated, they get grumpy, they get irritable. Over a long period of time, they can get depression, they can get anxiety. You have to go into deep sleep cycles to rest, repair, and digest. And if you're never going into that deep sleep cycle, you're basically living in stress. And over time, we know that stress can do terrible things physically.
It's it's fascinating, Kerry, in terms of the brain and how that then it impacts. And I was just thinking of an example of, you know, when somebody gives birth, and you know, this isn't going to turn into a, you know, into one of those conversations, but when I had a child, and the shock of to the brain, the body, of everything, that first year when you've got a newborn baby and then an infant, nobody is getting an awful lot of sleep. And yet, of course, I was, you know, like most people, would be back at work after 4 months. And I look back on that time and I think I don't really have much memory of it, really, because for much of the night I was up. And even if I wasn't up, I was anticipating having to get up to feed my daughter. It's extraordinary to me. And, you know, that it's, I've gone off on a bit of an offshoot, really. But that the idea of everything that you're talking about and the impact of a lack of sleep, and yet we expect new parents, I'm not just going to say new moms, but new parents to sort of return to work in this almost sort of zombie coma-like state.
So what's really interesting is I met and assessed myself while I was pregnant and then after giving birth as well. Mm. And what happens, it's quite amazing, it's nature's design to make sure that you protect that baby. So what it does is it takes all the sleep from the back of your head and puts it in the front of your head again, and takes all the busy from the front and puts it at the back of your head. So basically your brain's making sure that you're not super focused on everything else, that you're going to focus on the baby and keep it alive.
Right.
So you are absolutely correct. You are in a complete zombie state. I remember that feeling very well, doing things that were completely obscure, going into a bank and leaving my handbag on the chair and walking out, just absolutely not remembering it. And it is a little thing happening in your brain. We can measure the peak frequency of your alpha, which is your short-term memory, which disappears. And then about a year later, it comes back and your brain starts functioning at peak again. It's very interesting. It happens for a few different reasons, but definitely pregnancy and childbirth is one of them.
Yeah.
And lack of sleep, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, sleep deprivation is a form of torture.
Yes.
Let's talk about imbalances when it comes to sleep. You said that the most common imbalance that we see relating to sleep is too much sleep in the front of your brain while you're focusing, and too much busy at the back of your brain when you're supposed to be resting. Just talk about that.
So we call it a front-to-back reversal. It's just the wrong way around. When you go to sleep at night, your eyes literally slip to the back of your head, to your occipital lobes. That's where all the slow stuff is supposed to be. So when you have this front-to-back reversal, you're better to fall asleep. And because all the sleep's sitting in the front, you're going to need to do something to get tired to go to sleep. So you're going to need to watch TV, look at your smartphone, read a book, something that activates the sleep that's sitting in the front so that you can go to sleep. A lot of people will drink alcohol to calm the busy down at the back so that they're able to sleep, or they will medicate. They'll take sleeping tablets. Mm. It's just very hard to shut all the busy down so that you can go into a quiet space. There are many other traumas that happen as well. So if you've been through what we call fight or flight trauma, anything that's an infringement, your brain feels like you're on guard. So it doesn't allow you to relax. It's always making sure that the world's safe. I do think that post-COVID, a lot of us have been through a collective post-traumatic stress. So
totally agree.
There are a lot of people experiencing this right now. The stats that you mentioned, with 45% of our population not sleeping right now, is a post-COVID stat.
Sure. Sure. That is interesting. We just had a message in on Twitter saying, actually, I don't think my brain went back to functioning at peak again after having a baby. I'm permanently front to back reversed. Yeah, you and me both, pal.
Some people, it takes more than a year. Some people take 5, 6, 7 years. And it depends on their lifestyle afterwards. There are other things that happen in your brain, like we call it high coherence, where your brain locks into a certain pattern and doesn't let go of it. So her brain may have locked into not sleeping, and that's just now her new normal.
I think that's what's happened to me. I really struggle. And I must say, you know, my daughter sleeps really well. She's going to be 3 soon. I've been so lucky. I mean, unbelievably, she really has been amazing. But I am somebody who's always struggled with sleep and has always needed a lot of sleep. And so I haven't got that at all. But I feel as if at the moment where I am is that I feel locked into that state. She sleeps through, but I'm still waking up. I'm still waking up. I want to talk, you mentioned sort of pharmaceutical sleep aids, and I want to talk about those. A lot of people, an awful lot of people, rely on pharmaceutical sleep aids. And we actually spoke about sleep aids on the show a few weeks back, that we're not meant, these are not meant for long-term use, are they?
Absolutely. So short-term, they do provide a solution.
Yeah.
And it's like putting a cap over the problem. So while you're on those tablets, they're serving a purpose and they help you to fall asleep. But they don't fix what's underlying. And over long term, what happens is you get used to that dosage and then you're going to need a second dosage or you're going to need to change to a different type that's going to then serve the purpose.
Yeah.
I have multiple clients who are on sleeping tablets but still not sleeping. So then what's the point of taking them every day and spending the money on them and putting that into your body when it's not actually helping?
Yeah. And I guess at that, you know, and I was put on sleeping pills a number of years back, and it becomes a crutch. It becomes a thing of the fear of not having them. Because, and I think, again, because if you are somebody who's had sleep issues, and one of my biggest things is the fear of not getting to sleep, the anxiety of not getting to sleep is overwhelming. So then the thought that you then might have to one day come off these pills that have initially, as you say, in those first few days or weeks, given you sleep is terrifying. I suppose, Kerry, what we need to focus on now, we've talked about what happens and what happens to the brain and the impact. How do we retrain the brain? What can we do? What's the silver lining that I hope you're going to be able to give us in about 2 minutes, please?
Okay, so the way I do it, we would do an assessment and we would look at what imbalances are there. We would then teach your brain how to be more balanced. So we teach you, when your eyes are closed, how to calm all the busyness down. And we teach your brain to focus and get all the sleep that's in the front of your back to the back of your head. We calm down traumas. We get your brain to let go of locking into a situation. And we look at many other things. There are other things that are involved in not sleeping. We have a thing called your sensory motor rhythm, which is your mind-body connection. And when that's low, people battle to fall asleep. So there are multiple things that we'll look at to show your brain the pattern that it's in. Sometimes your brain just gets stuck and it needs to see where it is to be able to let that go. Without what I'm doing, I think eliminating all light is a very good idea.
Mm.
Don't sit on your computer until it's bedtime. You need to get rid of blue light. You stress a little bit before you're going to go close your eyes. So people watching TV, falling asleep, watching a series or whatever, that's not a good idea. Try not to have coffee. Don't work right up until bedtime. You need some kind of a de-stress time to relax before you go into sleep.
Everything that I'm hearing is things that might stimulate, whether it be, you know, watching TV or, you know, my terrible one is looking at the phone. What about, and that's like a visual thing, obviously, what about audio? Because sometimes what I'll do is pop in a podcast and fall asleep. Is that all right? Or is it still keeping my brain active in a way?
Your brain active.
Right.
And what's interesting is watching TV or doing something visual is not actually stimulating. What happens is you zone out in a frequency called theta, and that actually helps. It's a coping strategy that people use. It helps you to zone out to calm the busy down, so you're not thinking because you're focusing on the visual stuff. So it does help, again, temporarily, like the sleeping tablets.
Yeah.
But as soon as you start doing it as a pattern, then that will become normal and you won't be able to fall asleep without watching TV.
Sure.
The audio is better because your eyes are still closed and you're eliminating the light. So it is slightly better. Closing your eyes without any of it is obviously optimal.
How about things people are asking? How about things like white noise or anything like that? Is that saved my life, actually, when I had my daughter. She loved that. But what is that... If there's anxiety around, I'm not going to be able to fall asleep with nothing. How is a white noise? Is that okay to have a white noise machine going?
It is, because it's eliminating other external sounds. So if you're a light sleeper and you have noises coming from the external environment, it does help.
Yeah. Kerry, this has been a fascinating conversation. I much appreciate hearing from you. It's been hopefully really helpful to our listeners too. Kerry Rudman is a trained neurofeedback practitioner and the owner of Brain Harmonics.